Blog Talk Radio.
Number 362 and counting. And we're going to have another great show this evening. And thanks to all of you out there, all you former guests, listeners, callers. It's been such a success. A show, Voices Carry for Animals, has been running since June of 2014, just celebrated the a-year anniversary at the end of June, and we're going to keep going for these animals. This radio platform, you know, we all stand up for all the animals in need and distress, and our voices and actions really do matter, everyone, because once we all come together and work together, teamwork is the key. So please do your part. Put a little love in your heart and do your part, because we're striving to help these animals get better lives and futures they so well deserve. Let them live in peace, comfort, away from anxiety, abuse, neglect, cruelty, and let their rights be granted, not ignored. But I just want to go over a couple more things here before we do get started. My name is Debbie Dahmer, a.k.a. Mama Bear, and I am the producer and host for Animal Advocates Radio, Voices Carry for Animals, that comes to you live every Thursday at 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Central, 5 o'clock Mountain, and 4 o'clock Pacific. Listening worldwide, and you can call in at this number, and I will be taking callers towards the end of the show, like around 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. Call in at 310-982-4270, and that'll put you in the queue, and press 1 to alert me that you do want to speak to the guest. And try to, refrain from any noises in the background, noise, TVs, radios, conversations, and you're more than welcome to come on board. And all these shows are, recorded live and archived on Blog Talk Radio. So if you want to go to Blog Talk Radio, www.blogtalkradio.com/voicescarryforanimals, and you can follow these shows from there. If you press follow, and every time there's an upcoming broadcast, it will alert you in your primary email. And also, if all the shows are, you know, lined up. So whatever, you know, on-demand episodes you want to listen to, just press the link, wait a minute for it to download, and it will play. And on the left side of the screen, you can share on the social media icons. Just press and share which one you want to, you know, take it to. And also, this show is coming live from the PPJ Gazette Online, and that's www.ppjg.me. A big shout-out to Marty Oakley of TS Radio Network. That's where Voices Care for Animals originated back in 2014, and she's a great team player, and I had 163 shows as host on hers, and I highly appreciate it, and she helped me get Animal Advocates Radio together. And it's been together ever since. So she's a wonderful person and a great host, a great voice out there. And I can't thank her enough for all she's doing. And, you know, try to hook it. If you follow on the PPJ Gazette on the right-hand column, these shows will also be, you know, reminding you in your primary email. Just press and follow and then put your email address in. And then once upcoming broadcast comes up or an news article, and she does have some hot topics, it will alert you in your primary email. So please spread the word. And at the bottom of each article or promo, you can also share from the bottom of them the social media icons. So please keep spreading the word, everyone, because we're all in this together, and the teamwork is so awesome when we all work together and strengthen numbers. The strong, you know, the more we come together, the stronger we become, and we are better together than apart. And a big shout-out to everyone that's helped promote this show, and this list is huge from Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and Pinterest. A big thank you to all of you because getting a lot of support. And keep it up. The animal advocates out there rock because we're rocking the airways for the animals. And with this radio platform, we are coming together, and the more exposure, the better. But if we don't take action, we're only spinning our wheels, everyone. So please do anything you can because every effort counts. You know, if you're on social media and you're wanting to show you know, share these shows, you know, tag your friends in them. That way they get alerted because not everybody's on every social media at the same time and the place. So whatever, you know, invite friends to your groups that you're in or groups that I have. Take the time to share them to, you know, broaden your members and have them increase because the more voices out there, the better. And, you know, just take that moment if you're on Twitter, you know, increase your page by followers and you know, posting and tagging because that tagging, I do that a lot, you know, a list of followers that I always tag. And that way they'll see it because if they're not on social media at the same time as you, then they're not going to get it. So if you tag them, it will alert them. So I want another shout-out to Animal Advocate Alliance, Gary Bowden. He is a radio producer for All About Animals Radio. And that's if you go to the website, I am posting as Mama Bear, and he has my shows posted on there, on-demand episodes. If you go up to the top page, go to the AAA and click it, and you'll either have on the left side the live or the other podcast. But a big thank you to him for all he's doing. He was on the show last week, and a big shout-out to him because he's working hard out there and giving your support. Animal Advocate Alliance is on Facebook and also Twitter. If you check their pages out and All About Animals Radio, also on the two, Twitter and Facebook. So Gary Bowden, thank you so much. He's in the UK, and also the Save the Animal, Save the World, Loren Contino. She's got this show also posted on her website, the main website, www.blogtalkradio.com. facebook.com/voicescarryforanimals. And all this is teamwork, and it's amazing teamwork. All of us coming together and animal advocates alliances, animal advocates coming together globally. So it's wonderful that how we all team up and get our work together and peacefully. We're a great team and so thankful to have that because that's when we see the victories come in and we do the victory dance and we don't stop there. But I'm going to go ahead and my guest, it's her first time on this evening. It's not going to be her last. She is president of Oregon Wild Horse Organization, OWHO. And what we'll be talking about this evening is BLM relabeling land masses, BLM in order to manage wild horses in a way that it did not take grazing away from livestock producers, relabeled areas to avoid mandates in the law. So I'm going to bring her live and welcome her. Hey, Val, how are you? You're live and on the air. Go ahead. How are you?
Thank you.
This is awesome. Yes,
congratulations on your years.
Yes.
I hope to be around when you do your 10-year show. I hope to be here to celebrate more good news for horses than we have this bad news going on.
Yes, I hope so too, Val. And, thank you for all you're doing. You know, you're a positive impact, and we can't give up. We got to be relentless and from all angles and work together because these animals can't, defend themselves. They're helpless and voiceless and innocent. And if we don't stand up for them, they don't stand a chance. And there's no
That's
hope
right.
to carry
That's-
on. And the biggest problem
we have fighting wild horses is that the largest entity that wants to take them off of our public lands are the public lands ranchers, and they've got awful deep pockets. Our horses are pretty poor, so it's pretty hard to get our fight on for them, but we're trying.
Mm-hmm. And they're so, they deserve to live in peace and comfort and I've had a lot of shows on wild horses, Val, with roundups. Oh, my goodness. Those are so traumatizing.
They are. They are. And they are more, not just for the humans that watch them, but also for the horses themselves because you're taking them off their lands. And horses are very, very family-oriented. So they live in bands out in the wild. And when you take them away from their lands, they are separating, stallions from mares and even sometimes the younger foals from mares. And allegedly they reunite them at holding pens, but, sometimes that doesn't happen. So it's ripping them away from their families. So when I think about it, I think about how would I feel about, being ripped out of my home and away from my family and never feeling that freedom again. So that's part of the reason I fight for them the way I do. And, going right into the topic for tonight, because we only have an hour here, I just want to tell you, when I started doing some research recently, I was trying to find the real number of acres that wild horses are actually allowed to live on, because we know that the acreage that BLM claims that they're on now is about half of what they actually were on. According to the BLM maps in 1971. And when I was going through it, I was trying to find the real acreage, and it's almost impossible to find because BLM, when they say they manage so many thousands of acres, will often include areas that have been zeroed out in that total. Or it might be land that another entity owns, like a state or a private landowner, and those aren't public lands that are managed for the wild horses, but they're included in the totals that BLM gives you. So what I do know is that they're now on less than half of the land that they had originally. And the way BLM's been able to do that is through relabeling these areas. And when I started really digging into this relabeling issues, I did it because BLM in order to keep cows on the land, uses another law that's called the Federal Land Policy Management Act, or most people refer to it as FLPMA. And that's an act that came about and mandated that the BLM has to manage our public lands for all kinds of multiple uses. So that would include, you know, our wild horses, other wildlife, livestock, oil, gas, mining, recreation, all these sources half-looted in public lands management. But what it doesn't say is that every parcel of land has to have every use on it. So in BLM's attempt to use that law to get rid of the horses, what they've said on their horse lands is, okay, we originally had to manage these horses on the range, and the law said that wherever they were in 1971, we had to manage those areas principally for the wild horses and burros. So BLM took that word, range, and in the 80s, they decided to define some areas. So they called a wild horse range. They made it with a capital R to make it a title. And they said, okay, we're going to have three of those in the whole country for horses and one for burros. And those are the places we're going to manage principally for wild horses and burros. And every other place, we're going to manage for multiple uses. And so automatically they created these herd areas and herd management areas. So the herd area would be the large area that they outlined in 1971, but then to fit multiple uses onto that herd area like cattle, they drew a little circle there and they said this is the HMA, the herd management area. And that's the only place the horses are going to get to be. So when they did this, what they really did was they gave the cattle principal use of these herd areas, not the horses. And then when you look further into FLPMA, the FLPMA even says in it that nothing in that act overrides a prior land use plan. So it doesn't override the Free Roaming Wild Horses and Burros Act that was passed in 1971. So they have no authorization to take away that mandate for principal use. And even though they created herd areas and herd management areas and a range with a capital R, there's still nothing that amended the original Wild Horse and Burro Act to say you'd manage the areas where they were in 1971, anything less than principally for wild horses. But that's exactly what they're doing. And that's taken away more than half of the acreage that they were supposed to be on. And then when you sat and you made the pasture, right, this big pasture that they were in, when you made it smaller and smaller and smaller, all of a sudden they scream, hey, they're overpopulated. They're not. You made the area too small. So what we want is for them to give those areas back to the horses and manage them the way that the law said. And that's principally for wild horses and burros. And I know Christina's on the line. She might have something to add to that, Debbie.
Okay, I'll bring her on right now, okay? Just stay on there. Yeah, Christina Marie Anderson, and she's also with the Oregon Wild Horse Organization. You're live and on the air. How are you? And she's,
I'm fine.
This is wonderful, Christina. And she was former Balls Across America for a while. She's been on the show several times. So welcome back, and so glad to have you. This is
thank
awesome.
You.
Yep.
I don't have much to add to that. I mean, Val's doing a great job. It's a very complicated matter and subject, and, you know, and BLM has a tendency to make it even more complicated. And, you know, it's amazing that Val can even, you know, put it out there in a way that we can understand it. Because of, you know, and they do that intentionally, try to make it as complicated as possible. And it's very important that wild horse advocates understand this stuff and so that, you know, they can do a better job, you know, at trying to go after BLM and get Congress to understand it. And that I think is what, you know, our main initiative is to try to get Congress to understand what's going on and to do some investigating.
I totally agree. We need total justice for these wild horses and burros, because, I mean, what they're doing is so wrong, and it just doesn't make sense. You know, let the gun run
free. They're going to phase them out eventually with the way that they're managing them. And the viability of the herds and whatnot is getting less and less strong. And, you know, we'll end up with more in holding pens than we will on the land. And it also, it's a great cost to the taxpayers.
Oh, yeah. And it's terrible. I mean, the amount, I mean, I don't approve of that at all. As a taxpayer, no, definitely not. And so it's animal cruelty. I hate to see them in these holding pens, but it's so depressing. And I know their anxiety's up there, and they're just, you know, they're traumatized. And just, you know, it's so wrong for these wild horses to go through that, get chased by helicopters, you know, and it's, I mean, it's animal cruelty front lines. You know, first degree, that's the way I look at it. What part of this is not animal, I mean, this is animal cruelty that they don't understand? You know, how would they like to be, in, you know, be in their situation and turn the tables and let them be the wild horses and burros and see, you know, how they're being treated so unfairly and cruel. I mean, they don't deserve that at all. No animal does. No human does.
And
so
you know,
I'm sorry.
Can
what'd
you
say?
Me?
Yes.
Okay. This is Val again. I just wanted to say, you know, part of the reason that they're treated the way they're treated is because they're managed by an organization that, you know, did nothing but manage these lands for the ranchers and for mining and extractive agencies. And when they were mandated to manage these wild horses, they didn't want anything to do with it. And most of the time still, they don't want anything to do with these horses. The government gave them the task of managing animals that they already had a conflict of interest in. So we don't have people running the program who truly care about these horses. And that's a big part of the problem. And I think that, you know, yeah, we see all the emotion in it, right? We all want to react emotionally when we see these gathers and we see a young foal that gets separated from its mama, or, you know, in the one recently, they had a foal that got roped and flung over the back of an ATV to take to the trap pen, and that foal died a few days later. So I mean, we see the things that bring out that emotional reaction in us, but what BLM does is they use that against us, and they say, look, these wild horse advocates are emotional, and they're uneducated, and they don't know the law. So, Debbie, I'm telling you, my main mission in life is to educate advocates so that BLM cannot say we're not educated, cannot say we don't understand the laws. Because we're going to be educated, we're going to do better, and we're going to demand that BLM start following the laws. And I can tell you, the one big find I had when I was doing this research paper was that BLM admitted in the Federal Registry that they didn't know how many horses were out there in 1971. Yet, if you look on their website, they claim that they have to manage for a national population level, or what they call an AML, an appropriate management level, of about 27,000 horses. And they base this on a fictional number of horses they claim were out there in 1971. Now, I found that entry in the National Register, in the Federal Register, that said in 1986, that there was no census done in the 71, and that any estimate of population in 1971 was purely
speculative. So the first census wasn't even done until 1973, and that says that there were at least 60,000 wild horses and burros out there. And then recently, one of our researchers for OWHO found out that there was a court case, it's Dahl v. Clark, where defied, and they were the defendants in the case. And what they said was, they do not have an obligation under the law or regulations to reduce the wild horse population to 1971 levels. Defendants argue that the laws require them to remove wild horses only if actual ongoing substantial damage to the range is occurring because of an excess number of horses using it. And they also said in that court case that they challenged the censuses from 1971 to 1977, saying they were inadequate, inaccurate, and incorrectly reflecting true horse population, and they said that the numbers were actually substantially higher than the censuses we see from 1970s. So how can they manage for a population that they claim was out there in 1971 when in so many other places they have testified or written that the population in 1971 was not known and that it was likely much higher than what they guessed. And even Secretary Watts, he was the Secretary of the Department of Interior, in 1981 made a statement about the population back then, and he wanted them managed for the population of horses in 1981 because he felt that was more accurate. And what he was saying was in direct opposition to the BLM Myths and Facts page. Their Myths and Facts page says that there were 25,345 wild horses and burros in 1971, right? We found the first census that was about 60,000, but then there was another document which was a EIS that BLM did, and that's an environmental impact statement. And in that environmental impact statement, they were saying in 1983, I believe it was, that that there were at least 60,000 wild horses and 45,000 burros on the land. So it's astronomical to me that BLM can get away with just lying. And they've gone to Congress and they've testified to get their budget every year that these horses are overpopulation according to that 25,000 number from 1971. And it's a lie. It's a flat lie. And to me, this is where we aren't demanding that BLM follow the laws, because it is a U.S. Code Title 18 violation to lie to Congress and to lie to the American people. When they're a federal agency, they cannot do this. So why do they keep getting away with it? Why are we allowing this to continue?
That does not make sense. I mean, this is a disgrace to our government, Val, for this to be allowed and accepted, and these wild horses and burros go through this, you know, cruelty. And everyone, BLM is Bureau of Land Management, because BLM is also Black Lives Matter. But we're talking about the government here. And to get that, you know, if there's listeners out there that's not sure, that's our government that's in charge of this. And taxpayers' money that's getting, oh, it's just so aggravating. And Val, can you give your website out? And listeners out there, please check it out. You see what you can do, because the more of us come together, the stronger we become. What you can do when you donate, or, you know, give your voice, whatever it takes. Because I know this H.R. 6635, it hasn't passed yet. They just picked up another co-sponsor, Val, and it probably won't go anything done till after this break that the Congress is going to have. But that's the Wild Horse and Burro Act, Protection Act, about the helicopter roundups. So everyone, please make that call to your legislators, because there is the changes right there. Area code 202-224-3121. And also I heard about the SAFE Act, H.R. 3355, with the horse, horse slaughter and everything, because it's illegal in the United States to consume horse meat, but yet they can take them out to Canada, Mexico, ship them out. And this is just kind of like contradicts itself. So everyone, please call and the H.R. 3355 SAFE Act. I heard they're probably not going to do anything without that until they have this Congress recess. But the more people that call in, and if you don't want to call in, write an email to help and ask for co-sponsors, okay? Because we need change bad. I mean, it's sickening what's going on.
Now, the issue with horse slaughter, Debbie, is actually a food safety issue as well. I mean, the horses are not raised as food animals, so they're not raised for human consumption, and they're given a ton of different medications, especially horses that you see in, in somebody's pasture or barn. They're given a ton of different pain medications and antibiotics and things like that that can feed through to a human that might consume that animal if it's processed for the human food chain. And even our wild horses carry diseases that can be transferred to a human when they eat the flesh of a horse. And right now, BLM wants to dart all these horses with a birth control product called Gonacon. And Gonacon, if you read the fact sheet, flat out says that it shouldn't even be handled by a pregnant human, and it says that it can sterilize a human female. So there are no studies that we can find, none, that say that if the animal dies and a human consumes the flesh of that animal, that it doesn't sterilize the human then. And that product, Gonacon, when I was doing the research on it, I found out they've been using it for years in deer and elk. Where are the studies saying it doesn't feed through to people? Or even, a deer, an elk, or a horse that dies out on the range, and then, other species are consuming the flesh. You've got wolves and bears and all these endangered species that feed on dead animals out there. Well, are we sterilizing them, giving them this product? We don't know. Those studies don't exist, but yet our government looks at it and they go, oh, it's easy to use. We can use a remote darter. And guess what? It sterilizes the horses easy. So let's use that, and we can just quietly sterilize these horses and not even look at the environmental consequences beyond that. And that's scary to me, and people should be demanding that these products are studied better. There is a safe one out there, that's PZP, and we do support the use of PZP-22, which is all naturally occurring ingredients. It's been tested on wild horses for almost 40 years in Assateague, and it's doing a wonderful job. It's used overseas in other animal species, in our zoos, on several exotic species. And it's been very, very successful. It's reversible as long as it's managed properly. And I think that as we push for BLM to open up these areas again, we allow more land to be used for the horses as was intended, and we bring up our herd population sizes so that they're genetically viable. I think that people who don't like the idea of birth control aren't thinking about the what if. What if we get the land back? What if our herds are large enough and we still don't have predators because they've been wiped out by the livestock industry? How then do we make sure that we're not putting the horses into another bad situation where there truly is too many for the land capacity, especially during all these droughts? So, it's got to be a multifaceted
approach, and it would be different for every single herd. It should always be a floating formula, and I don't feel BLM should be in charge of it. I just don't feel like we have people without a conflict of interest that are willing to really do some good management for these animals. I think it's been a system of no management. It's been round them up and remove them. And anything else they've done at such a small scale, it's had no effect. And that's the same with PZP. The herds that were darted with PZP, they didn't do on a large enough scale to control the population. So then they turned around and said, it doesn't work. We don't want to use it.
Mm. Whoa.
That's one thing about the Titus bill. You know, when you write in to support it, please ask them to tighten up the language on it, because it does stop the helicopter roundup, which we all want to see done. But it also opens up so many loose language in that bill that gives BLM almost open textbook as to what they can do instead. And so we don't want to give them more power than they already have, as far as fertility drugs, as far as management and who they, you know, subcontract out to for humane management, like wranglers and so on and so forth. I mean, because I really have a hard time thinking that this is not going to end up in the hands of ranchers. And I have a hard time believing that that'll be anywhere near humane. So I'd really like to see
Christina,
that bill tightened up a little bit of language.
Yeah, that's H.R. 6635 you're talking about, right? The Wild Horse and Burro Protection Act. It should be amended better, right? That's what we were saying?
Exactly, yes. The language needs to be tightened up. There's so many things in there that they want. I mean, it's a good bill, but it's too loose language. And I fear that it'll give BLM even more power to use fertility and subcontract out to different entities that may not be humane. And then there's also no real oversight for a year. And it doesn't say whether or not they have to come up with a plan within the first year, or whether they can implement these things and then come to Congress in a year. It, you know, it's just such loose language. It really bothers me. I'd really like to see that tightened up before it gets passed.
Representative Cohen did introduce an amendment that just very simply says no more helicopters. So if anything, I think I would support that amendment. And I'm sorry, I don't have the bill number. But I think that that would be really good. And I have some of the same concerns about the Titus bill, which is H.R. 6635, in that there's a big chunk in there that they want to appropriate to developing partnerships for management of the wild horses regarding fertility control. And I have the same concerns, because, you know, we stopped BLM from doing surgical spaying experiments on mares two different times here in Oregon. And what's to say that if they get this blanket permission to work with an organization, they're not going to contract with another organization to do those spay experiments? There's nothing in there that would prohibit that, or from giving them this dangerous gonocon that they haven't fully researched yet. So, or any new plan that they might come up with. You know, there's just no limitations in there, and I'd like to see those limitations as well.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be done right, because, you know, these wild horses and burros, they can't speak for themselves. So we got to do what's right for them. Let them live comfortably, because this has been going on for such a long time. And we need change. And everyone, Mama Cat always says, strength in numbers. So that is so true. And, you know, so please do your part, whatever you can do, because they need us. I mean, they need us bad. If you want to see change, be a part of it and take that action. because that's what it takes. We can't just sit idle and just keep letting it happen year after year, decade after decade. It's time. Time is long overdue. And if you want to protect these beautiful animals, I mean, and animals are so, you know, awesome anyway. And all lives matter, including all the animals. So we have to make sure that they're living comfortably and not in fear and anxiety and torture and just discomfort, because we know we don't want to live that way. So, you know, and Christine and Val, and a big shout out to Oregon Wild Horse Organization. Thanks for everything you're doing, and keep it up. Yeah, I know you're proactive.
You asked before. Yeah. People can follow us at OWHO on Twitter or Oregon Wild Horse Organization on Facebook, or our website is oregon-wildhorse.org. And, you know, feel free to join. We do Zoom meetings. We call them public information meetings, or PIMS. Every Friday, and you can look on our Facebook page and Twitter for those announcements. And what I do is I have people message the organization that they'd like to attend, and then we email you the invite and ask you if you want to be on the weekly invite list. And we send that out with the topics that we're going to be discussing. And I do things like teaching people how to find plans that are up for a public comment so you can get involved, and then how to write what BLM considers a substantive comment so they have to reply. And then I teach people how to write public records requests, how to look at media articles that come out and really do some critical reading of those articles, and then research the information so you find the truth. And we have such a wonderful team with this organization, Debbie. Christina obviously is my right hand in this. And then we have people that are on as legislative liaisons, as rangeland liaisons that are out there on the ground. We have a water hauling team that can partner with Forest Service or BLM and haul water where it's needed for the horses. We are doing legal work and filing administrative appeals. So, you know, it's an active group of researchers, and we're all 100% volunteer. So, you know, absolutely anytime somebody wants to get involved, you can volunteer. We can find that niche that you're good at and put you to work. Or if you wanted to, you know, help out by making a donation, certainly we're happy with that as well. And because we're 100% volunteer, every dime of the funds would go toward our horses and the programs that we do for them.
Wow, that's inspirational. You know that? What you're doing, very heartfelt. And volunteering your time, it's important time, everyone. You know, so whatever you could do, because none of this stuff costs, you know, free. And whatever you do, donate, whether it's $1, $5, or whatever, it's going to go to a good cause and help out. Because we know everything, and they're advocating for all wild equines and their habitats. You know, and keep it up, ladies, because you're much needed. I mean, it's obvious. And coming together and becoming stronger, and, you know, doing something about it, not just, you know, sitting idle or looking the other way or ignoring it, because you're seeing it. You're, you know, and I've seen these videos where these wild horses are in these kill pens, and it's so, I mean, depressing and heartbreaking. And they're in just, you know,
I just wanted to say that
fear.
All those who live in Oregon, please get involved. The majority of Oregonians, the mass population, live on the west side of the Cascade Mountain Range. And they don't even realize that we have these iconic, majestic animals on the east side. And so we really need to get it out there. And California's the same way. You know, the mass majority doesn't know about their majestic wild horses. So we really need to boost that public knowledge to the masses so we can get the support for these horses. You know, we all know about our Utah horses and our Nevada horses and so on and so forth. Like Oregon and California, the horses are kind of and the horses are kind of aloof to, you know, the mass population as far as even understanding that we have them. So if you live in Oregon, get involved. Do some research. Get, you know, start paying attention. Look at some of the images of our beautiful horses here in Oregon on our Facebook page or on our website. Get a T-shirt to support the horses here in Oregon. So when somebody says, what does your T-shirt mean? You could say, these are our horses. We need to support them. They need the public to be a voice.
That's right. And everyone out there, you know, visit their, if you're from Oregon, go to their Facebook page or Twitter or website and share it on your timeline to bring more awareness in, you know, invite friends to their page and be more alert and aware, bringing awareness in and education, what's going on behind the scenes, and do you approve it or disapprove it? And I think you're going to disapprove it. You know, it's terrible, and it's disgusting. And these wild horse and burros, they need they deserve a better life out there, just like all other animals, because they're, you know, let them live in freedom, not in fear and high anxiety and just, I'll tell you, some of these videos I've seen, it's hard to watch them. Because it's so cruel. Does anybody want to call in and have any comments for Val Kasima Hogsett or Christina Marie Anderson? And Christine, I'm going to add you to the promo, okay? Because you came on air. But I'll get that changed after the show, okay? And anybody wants to have any questions or comments, try to refrain from any noises in the background. You know, TVs, radios, conversations, you're more than welcome to come on board. And this is the same number every Thursday, everyone. Area code 310-982-4270. Press 1, you'll be in the queue. Again, you can also call in from Skype, okay? You can listen in worldwide, unlimited callers, and go there. We do have a caller. It's area code 928. And you're going to be live and on air. Welcome to Animal Advocates Radio, Voices Care for Animals. How are you this evening? You have any comments or questions for Val or Christina? Go right in.
Thank you, guys. My name is Deb. I'm here in Arizona. You can find me on Twitter at DebH0609. I've been advocating for the wild horses and burros since June of 2014, oddly enough, so 8 years together here. I work in Oakland. We have a wild herd there, and, you know, it's mostly tourists, you know, come to see them and everything, and they're pretty much protected. But about 6 weeks ago, they did a roundup here in Mojave County, about 1,200 burros, and it was really hard to watch, just truckloads of them leaving the area. And like you say, it's heartbreaking, it's unnecessary. We have free-range, you know, cattle all around the area. They do more destruction than any one burro can ever do. And so you're right. It is very emotional, and I think a lot of us carry that heavy in our hearts. And I appreciate you gals, you know, saying we need to be, I guess, more educated and not put the emotion into it and just keep fighting. You know, I try to get it out there on Twitter all the time, and, you know, I think together we can do it. And I really appreciate this show. I thank you guys very much.
And, you know, I was out on Oregon's, I went with a friend, Lorna, and we went out to three different HMAs. We spent 4 days out there in Burns, and we saw 5 wild horses on Palomino Butte HMA. The other two HMAs, we saw some, you know, evidence of the horses, but we didn't see any. We stopped at the Burns holding facility on our way out, where we counted over 850 in holding. We saw five in the wild and 850 in holding. Now, I mean,
exactly,
there was more obviously out there in the wild that we, you know, that were too, you know, far for us to find or whatever. But, you know, for spending 4 days driving around out there and so on and so forth and getting out and hiking around and whatnot, to see only five in the wild, it was really impacted me, you know. And then go see 850 plus in holding facility. And that's, it shouldn't be that way. It, you know, it should be more out there in the wild that you could see, you know, and less in the holding facility. It just struck me as you know.
It's my understanding they stay in the holding facility for quite a while, don't they? I mean, they're there for months or...
Some of them do. It depends on the interest in the herd itself, too. Like, recently there was a gather of the Sandwash Basin horses, and those horses mm-hmm. have been famous on Facebook and other social media sites, and so there was a lot of interest in getting those horses adopted to people. But when you get lesser-known herds, there's not that huge interest in getting them adopted out. One of the problems now and the reason that you're seeing them more in the kill pens is because they did do the $1,000 incentive where anybody who adopts a wild horse now is getting money when they adopt it and then the rest of the money once that horse is titled to them a year later. And a lot of people, when they adopt a wild horse, they have no clue what they're getting. They assume you're going to get that nice pasture pet you see when you're driving down the road that people, you know, can walk right up to and brush and pet and ride and all that. That's not what you're going to get with a wild horse. You are getting a wild animal. So a lot of mm-hmm. times when they adopt these horses, they all of a sudden realize they can't handle them. And then they end up going to auction because they don't know what else to do with them. So this adoption program is set up to fail these horses. They do not go out and do all the compliance checks that they claim they're going to do. And if I could just say, too, Deb, I was going to respond to your comment. I'm not saying that we shouldn't be emotional. I'm saying we have to be more than that. And we should be emotional because we're not psychopaths. Those people that we watch that can go out and gather these horses and rip them away from their homes, I don't believe they have the ability to feel the empathy that most wild horse advocates or even other animal advocates do feel. And a lot of because these contractors are also ranchers. So what do they do for a living? For a living, they raise animals that they ship to slaughter. So they don't have that empathy or they're able to compartmentalize it. And a lot of times I think there's a certain level of psychopath that happens with some of these decisions where they just don't care. And I think I watched that in a veterinarian that wanted to do these spay experiments. I mean, he talked about how he'd not had great success in the first round of experiments. And, oh, well, it's just a learning curve. Got to do more so I can perfect it. And I'm like,
yeah.
Do you not realize these are living beings that have feelings? So please don't ever think that I'm saying don't be emotional or that I'm not emotional. I've had to learn to compartmentalize this, and I've had to learn that the only fight that's successful is the one that's legal and challenges the laws or challenges the science that they use because they use bias science and old reports and studies, and that's another thing that we fight them on legally too, is the fact that they're mandated to use the most recent available science, and they don't. So, you know, I have to go at it from a legal perspective because that's where we can make change. But
thank you. I appreciate that. Yes. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
You know,
wasn't one of the resources they from in the 1930s or 40s, Val? That you found?
No, it was, I found one resource where they were claiming that the The wild horses and burros had damaged riparian and stream-sized areas. And then they say that the rangeland health assessment for the cattle allotments that are the same area haven't been done since 1989. However, they didn't do riparian and streamside area assessments when they did those assessments, so they're relying on data from 1970. So they're saying that the horses have done all this damage, but there hasn't been an assessment done since 1970. So how do they know who or what's doing the damage? I think it's probably the cattle that are out there in much higher numbers than the horses. So, you know, they play games.
I agree. I see the cattle. Yeah, in my backyard.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they, you know, and they have done, you know, I always bring up Heart Mountain here in southeastern Oregon, which was a refuge that had cattle on it. And they removed the cattle, and it took 20 years for that land to repair itself with a little help from, you know, environmentalists and ecologists and stuff, and the Oregon State University and whatnot, working with Fish and Wildlife. And there was never any horses on that land, never. All that damage that took 20 years to repair was done by cattle.
Right.
So there is mm-hmm. evidence, you know, but it's not brought up. You know, and there's other areas too, you know, in other states and here in Oregon where, you know, there aren't wild horses. There's only cattle, and you can see the damage being done, and you can't blame the horses for it if they were never there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something else. I mean, to everyone, I hope you listen and keep sharing these shows. And like I said, please, on their website, you know, check it out. You know, share it on your Facebook pages, groups, Twitter. And Deb, thanks for calling. I tag you in my show promos. And I want to give you a big thank you to you and all of you out there. When I tag you and you retweet it or share it, it's highly appreciated. That's what's awesome teamwork. It's inspiring. And it keeps me going. You know, it just puts a smile on my face.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, same here. You know, that's what keeps me going. I can't do it by myself. I need everybody else's help, too. You know?
Yeah, that's right.
I think we'll make a difference.
And Deb, we'll look for you on Twitter. And you can find us on Twitter, too. And we'll follow each other.
Just so that you know, we actually have a ground crew in Arizona. So, you know, if you want to get in touch with me through Facebook, you can message the OWHO Facebook page, and I can give you some more information on that as well. But we do a lot of work out there. We've done water hauling for quite a few years. I wasn't with OWHO at the time. OWHO is new. But I was with Citizens Against Equine Slaughter, and we're still doing some work out in the Arizona area. So if you want to get in contact with me, I'd be glad to see where we can work cooperatively for your area. And I don't know that there's much we can do for the boroughs. I think that was the Black Mountain HMA, correct?
Yes. And ladies, we're down to a minute and a half here. Val?
Alrighty.
Thank you so much for coming on this evening, and I'm looking forward to having you back on, and you too, Christina Marie Anderson, okay? And a big shout out to all you're doing. Oregon Wild Horse Organization takes teamwork to see any victors, everyone. And Deb, from Twitter, thank you for calling in. Feel free to call in anytime, okay? And thanks for all your support on these shows. I appreciate it
so
much.
I'll be in touch. Yep.
Oh, yes.
Yes, I will. Thank you.
Thank you for everybody tuning in this evening, all you new listeners. Welcome aboard. Keep spreading the word, all you returning listeners. Can't thank you enough for all your support and everything. Like I said, it takes teamwork to see any of those victories, and that's what it takes. Strength in numbers, everyone. So, like I said, you know, give them your support, whatever you do. Bring them awareness, tag your friends in them. You know, keep building your groups and pages, because that's what it takes. Because that way, when the ones that's not available online, there's other ones there. So, but next week we'll be off, and we'll be returning the following Thursday. So everyone have a great evening, and thank you for tuning in, and may God bless you all. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Nice meeting you, God.
Bye-bye. Next step, Christina, Al, thank you.